Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door, just like a Murillo Crossfield ball. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you win? Only via the app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Danilo's free.
We've seen them attack them, and they're threatened! Well, that's what I wanted to see Robinson do! Tyler won, he scores! And the sticky ground goes ballistic!
He's through here! And in the end, Forrest will say it doesn't matter how you play, as long as you win it!
Hello and welcome to the latest. Hello, welcome to the latest edition of Red Side Ledge Trent. So I had a few technical difficulties. I'm your host Christian Brown, and we come to you shortly after Nottingham Forest 1-1 draw at AFC Bournemouth. Thankfully, the ground didn't blow away this time, so we actually got a game on. I'm joined by Rhys Lane and Adam Wicklow, who was our man on the ground for those who are chasing a bingo card. Hello, chaps. Unfortunately, no Lee Clark today again because, although he does have a valid reason this time, it's his wife's birthday. So happy birthday to her. And yeah, let's dive in, chap. So, Adam, we'll start with you. So, there are six changes to the team. Obviously, Matt Sells came in for his debut, thank the Lord. And then, obviously, we had Nico Williams and Tavares at right back and left back, respectively. Sorry. And then, was it Ryan Yates came back into midfield, and Hudson-Odoi and Elanga both started. What did you make of that? Because that was obviously quite a bold selection, but equally it felt like a sign that we're maybe getting back to where our team is looking at its best, if that makes sense.
Yeah, the horrible rumours that Matt Sells' work permit might have not gone through rang true throughout Boscombe, as the locals refer to Bournemouth, obviously. And then delight as it actually wasn't true, and the people in the know were in the mud, and we was all singing Matt Sells in the middle of our goal. Me and Alex, who went down. That was a positive. Good to see that front four together for a change. Very attacking. Very looked like with a lot of intent. Midfield was where I was kind of a bit like, who's going to be the one that kind of dictates? Obviously, Oro Mangala's gone to Lyon, so it's kind of. It was a bit like one of them. And I saw Ryan Yates doing it in the warm-up, kind of like getting the ball off players and trying to then like play out like it was a game of trying to dictate. And I was quite worried about that because that is really not his game. And I'm sure we'll get onto later where I thought he hid for most of it, to be honest. I thought overall really, really positive from Nuno. I think he set his stall out to go out to with Bournemouth and really have a go at him. And that's only a good thing, but as we'll dissect the game later, it didn't quite go to plan as we'd intended.
No, perhaps not. But yeah, I mean, it wasn't the best start, was it, Rhys? Because once again, just a very easy goal to give away. Especially if we're in 5 minutes, obviously Bournemouth get a corner and Williams misses the header at the front post, and then that's enough for them to score, basically. Aside from the obvious disappointment, what's your sort of take on the goal? And yeah,
it was similar to the Brentford goal, wasn't it? The second Brentford goal, in the sense that someone's won a header again at a near post. Obviously, the Brentford goal was just a header on goal, which has gone in. This one's more of a flick on. I mean, it was a good ball, I'll give him that, but it's a flick on to the back post, and then Clive Ertz just touched it in on the line, and yeah, he'll get his goal for that. But I mean, I watched it just before we come on. Annoyingly, Gibbs White's on that back stick as well, but he runs to the front post as it's flicked on. So it's obviously flicked on to the back post, whereas if he was probably still there, it's not his fault, of course, but if he was still there, he probably would have just cleared that away. But yeah, I'm not sure who was it. Was it Sinisterra who got in front of Williams, wasn't it? It's just ball watching a bit into there, Nico, and Sinisterra's got in front of him, flicked it on. And it, from their point of view, it's a well-worked routine, but from our point of view, it's a bit too easy and it's a bit too soft, isn't it? And what was it, 5 minutes into the game, already you've got an uphill battle. And to be honest, I thought that was their only real threat all afternoon, Bournemouth. I just thought the only undoing from us was going to be from a set piece. I didn't really worry about anything else personally. I just thought the only time I was concerned was when they were whipping corners or free kicks into his box.
Yeah, it was a little, obviously, it's just annoying. That's the 13th goal we've conceded now from a set piece this season, which is a league high. And it's just like so frustrating. Obviously, on the one hand, we look much more adept at attacking set pieces, thanks to our new set piece coach, but defending them still seems to be the same old issues. And it's either really set pieces
or sloppy errors into our goals.
Yeah.
I mean, they
must
make
blind, as was the case today.
Yeah. I mean, they must make up, got to be over 90% of the goals we conceded, isn't it? Just sloppy errors and set pieces. It's really frustrating. And you know, we can keep saying it needs to change. Of course it does, but it keeps happening. And, you know, it's just frustrating from our perspective.
Very much so, yeah. I mean, obviously, generally speaking, I think Forest pretty much, we struggled for the first 15 minutes to get out of our half, really. Bournemouth started very well, to be fair, so I'm going to give them credit for that. But eventually, I think on a turning point, Dominguez started to win a few tackles, and then we started to get a bit of momentum going. And we actually cut them open quite a few times and made some good chances. I mean, but a few really good few moves together. There was one in particular for Awoniyi where he was played in. And no, there was the first time I give Swite, which fair enough, you know, he slipped. You can't do a lot about that. But the second time where he's played in, he really, really should work Neto into a better save and just tamely passing the ball to him, which is a bit annoying. But eventually the pressure did tell just before half time. And Callum Hudson-Odoi wriggles through a few and tries to replicate his Burnley goal to great effect.
Yeah, I mean, took it really well. I completely didn't realise he actually makes the tackle on the edge of the box himself and then nips past the player. I thought Murillo had won the ball initially in the 50-50 with Semenyo because he went down, and then I thought it kind of fell to Callum Hudson-Odoi. But no, he kind of struggled to get in the game, and then they're the moments where you want someone of his ilk to kind of pop up and do something out of nothing. That's why he was so highly regarded, and we've banged the drum about this potential of the buzzword, as Reece likes to call him. And yeah, it's a great strike. No keeper in the Premier League gets near that in my eyes. It's side netting sort of stuff. And it was a shame that it took us so long to really like test Neto in that sense, because I think, yeah, like you said, all the other efforts we had were kind of like passbacks almost, to be honest. And you kind of just think like, right, well, let's get into the second half now and get at him. But well, we'll probably go on to it. It was a bit of a dead rubber in the second half, wasn't it? It was a bit rubbish. We didn't really get the ball to Callum Hudson-Odoi after that, I didn't think. And he was probably the one that looked like the brightest spark out of our attacking front four.
Definitely, yeah. I felt Elanga looked like a man who hadn't been playing because of an injury. That makes sense. So he looked like...
He looked rusty.
Yeah,
very, very rusty. But... Lloyd Kelly had his number, I think, to be fair.
Yeah, because they weren't really getting much of the ball, like you said, the wingers. It was very, the only one who was really was Hudson-Odoi. He was trying to like,
you know, hardly got the ball to Elanga at all. I thought he was just isolated, to be honest.
Through no fault of his own, really.
No.
You know? But at least it's good to get some minutes into his legs, at least. I think he got like 75, something like that. So that's good. Before obviously the subs came on. But yeah, you're right. Second half was mostly a non-event. It was like your classic championship game of lots of head tennis and lots of high balls, and it was almost like going in a bit of a time warp, but with better players. It was really surreal. But there were two incidents of note I want to talk to you about, because the referee unfortunately does make the headlines. Reece, I'll go to you first. So the decision not to send Justin Cliver off for about, I'd say, at least three, maybe even four bookable offences, in addition to all the persistent fouls he was giving away too. How has he not been sent off? after very shortly after before he was taken off after 55 minutes.
I don't know, mate. I mean, when he gets booked, it's for some petulance, isn't it? After the referee's given a foul to Bournemouth, and he's kind of gone in after it's been given. I can't remember who it was on now. I think it might have been a Langer. I'm not 100% on that, so don't quote me, people in the comments. But, you know, he clattered into one of our players anyway and got booked for it after the ball had been stopped dead by the referee giving a free kick. And then the one for me, there was a couple of cheap fouls where, you know, he's come nudge somebody in the back and, yeah, fair enough. But the one for me was where Dominguez had got away from him and he just brought him down. Now, if he's not on a card, that's a yellow card every day of the week. I'm not sure why the referee hadn't given that. And it was no surprise to see Areola bring him off straight after it. Because, to be honest, his head had gone after the first challenge when he got booked. He just looked to me. And then he kept giving away fouls. And it's getting to a point where you're watching as a fan thinking, come on, let's have some more of this. Because you're going to get yourself sent off here, mate. You know what I mean? And he did the challenge what really should have got him sent off. And as soon as the referee didn't book him and give him a second yellow, he was brought off straight after. And it's like, yeah, well, Bournemouth probably thought, oh, we've got away with one there. I'm not sure, mate. It was two bookings for me personally, but, you know, only the referee will know that.
I think the one that got me was that, you're right, that one was bad on Dominguez, but
he actually got away from him and he just brought him down.
Just packed him down. I mean, it was the one with Dominguez with Amadele, where he's literally gone into the back of Amadele and he's obviously kicked off, being saying, like, look, how many more is that?
Yeah,
obviously, and he punts the ball away and he gets booked for that. It's like throwing the ball in the floor. It's like, come on. Like, I've never, it was just it's almost a Forest set of events. If you look at like a live commentary, like someone put a clip, a connect up on Twitter, right? It was like 55, Amadele wins a foul. 55, Amadele booked. It's like, how could he win a foul and be booked? Like, absolute nonsense. But
this is what I mean about referees when I say they need to help themselves. You know, you can't even, I get, you know, they want to obviously bring the respect in, but you can't, it's like sometimes you can't even talk to them without getting a card, it seems nowadays, you know. This is years and years of Mike Riley wanting them to be like robots, and it's crept in. You can't even talk to them sometimes, or you get booked. They just can't seem to get that fine line between, you know, being aggressive towards a referee and just asking a simple question. You know, he should have been sent off, and Areola knew it because he dragged him off straight away, as I've just said.
You just wish the justice had come of obviously the volley sending off at our ground where he's won the ball and got a second yellow card for winning the ball. I know we obviously get Billing ends up getting sent off, which I'm sure you're going to ask me about, Christian, aren't you? I imagine it. At the time, I thought it was a red because I just thought it was absolutely disgusting. Because I know he's trying to clip
it. It's
the intent, isn't it? I mean, you go right down the back of his Achilles there. Yes. And I mean, Hudson-Odoi looked in a lot of pain. I mean, luckily he walked off and he said, and then he said in his post-match he'll be all right. It was just an impact thing, but that's a disgraceful tackle.
That was proper ratty, I thought.
Yeah, that's a serious injury challenge. And you know what? I'll give the referee some bloody credit here because there's so many referees, I'm telling you now, in the Premier League who'd give a yellow for that and just say, oh, well, it's just trying to stop play. The ball was 5 yards gone. And that challenge was to just basically try and injure a player. It was an absolutely disgraceful challenge. And I'm glad the referee showed some actual balls, with no pun intended, and actually brought out the red, because as soon as it happened I was like, that's a red. And there's so many times I've seen a referee just brandish a yellow there, and you'll get pundits sticking up for it saying, well, it's just took one for the team.
You can take one for the team and not try to injure someone.
He could have broke his ankle or snapped the ball, done his Achilles tendon with that challenge. A terrible tackle, and I'm glad brought out the red card. It was a
it did make me laugh. Decision. It did make me laugh that Billing like kind of loitered around like, am I going to get a VAR?
I mean, on the Sky footage on the game, not the Sky footage, on a stream, it showed you Areola looking at the tablets he had by the the bench nowadays, and he was like perplexed by the decision. I'm like, how can you actually watch that and think that isn't a red card? Do you know if Sangare or Ryan Yates had done that challenge, or whoever it would be in the midfield, Dominguez, you just got to hold your hands up for that. That was, you know, you could give a player a serious injury that challenge. It was terrible challenge.
I feel like there's sort of this unwritten sort of code in football, isn't there? Where I think there are some challenges in that instance that are acceptable, like a clip or a shirt pull or something like that. Obviously, that you know full well you're not getting a card for your action, but you're taking him on for the team.
Yeah,
what Bedingfield did was disgusting. Like, he's very clearly gone to hurt him. Like,
I get it. He has tried to clip him, but he's just got it so badly wrong. And when you get tackles badly wrong in football, you pay the price. Unfortunately,
that's it. Yeah, I thought that was really, really poor. There was also one other I kind of completely forgot to gloss over in the first half. There was a slight penalty appeal. It sort of looked at it pretty quickly and it went on. Obviously, it's probably one of those which I kind of get the annoyance, because if it's anywhere else on the pitch, it's probably a foul. The one on Yates, because obviously he had his shirt pulled and then sort of pushed to the floor. But whether it's a penalty, I don't know. I mean, it's one of those you've probably seen them given, but obviously not to be today.
Not for me. I think the commentator on my stream hit it bang on. Yeah, that if you're kind of giving them, you're
giving 5 cents every game. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. I think you'd probably need a bit more. I mean, yeah, they are Kelly is grappling with him, but I think you need a bit more personally for me.
That's fair enough. Yeah, I'm guessing you haven't chanced to that back, have you, Adam? Well, it was right in front of you, I suppose, that Yates incident, wasn't it?
You claim, but nah. I mean, I like Yates as Housery at times where he goes down, but he was more bothered about going down today than actually playing the bloody game. So, you know, you've known all my thoughts. I've said it in WhatsApp. I'll probably say it on here in a bit. But he was more bothered about, I don't know, trying to wind the opposition up than play football for me. He wound me up to death, to be honest. But yeah, no, not a penalty. Like Reece said, you'd get about a million given every game.
Nah, fair enough. Yeah. Fully take that on board. But there was one thing, I suppose, we have to end on. Obviously, after the red card, Reece, once again, Forest have this opportunity. I think it was 6 minutes of normal time and 7 added on. So, give or take 15 minutes. And just didn't even make... I think Neto had one save. It was a tame P-roller from Gibbs-White, who really should have passed that to Ribeiro, if we're being honest. I love Gibbs-White, but he should have passed that. Especially coming on his weaker foot, too. But other than that, that's poor. That's really, really poor. And whether it was Tavares' delivery or Montiel's delivery at the time, once he came on, it just seemed like, you know, he was just clueless against 10 men. That's really, really concerning. It's the fifth time this season now.
Yeah, I mean, Twitter's quite split what I've read on it. I mean, there is obviously people wanting more, a bit like myself. You know, I'm not... The problem is with Twitter, you can't, there's no balances. If you want a bit more, it means you've got to basically chuck 11 men forward and go absolutely gung-ho, which is not what you want. You know, you just want some sustained pressure, some balls into the box, you know, when it gets booted out, the fact that they're deep is probably going to come back to you. And you just need to keep sticking it in their box, you know, and keep pulling them from side to side and making opportunity work. And it seems to be persistent against 10 men, and it kind of seems not too sure what ideas we've got, because obviously we are a counter-attacking team, so we have got to change it up a little bit when you're against 10. Just seemed a bit lacking in ideas. I mean the crossing, I mean, what Monty had, he put one straight out of play. I mean Gibbs-White, who I thought was a bit poor today, I think he just dwelled on the ball a bit too much for me today, Gibbs-White, rather than just kind of keeping it simple. I mean, he had that tame effort, like you say, Christian. I mean, you need Neto to make the howler of all howlers for that to go in. And it just wasn't really...
Turner would have let that in, to be fair.
Well, it just wasn't... Just that little bit more oomph for me. You know, I get as well people saying, you know, we've had two new players come on today, etc. And... You know, we're obviously a bit leggy, which we are because of the options we've got. But, yeah, it would have been just nice, I guess, to have created one or two decent chances, or at least one. Like, we're at one decent chance where if you kind of miss it, you think, oh, bloody hell, we should have scored then. We didn't really have anything, did we? And, you know, it's not like, to be honest as well, it's not the first time, as you said, Christian, we've been against 10 men several times this season. I know only for probably 10, 15 minutes in games, but... We've really struggled, haven't we, to kind of cut to cut teams open, which is, you know, a bit of a worry in that sense.
It is a bit of a worry, yeah. And obviously, that was pretty much it after that. I mean, I say Bournemouth had half a chance towards the end, obviously got a corner, and then obviously blew full time before the corner was taken. But other than that, like, that was it. It was the, like, most nondescript second half imaginable, really. And obviously, we leave Bournemouth with the points said, which I actually, I suppose, like, I was a bit sort of not, trying to word this. It was one of those where I think that we really needed to win today. I was partly thinking, I was like, look, with everything else, we need to get 3 points. Like, obviously, Luton have turned up the pressure a bit and a few other teams as well. We still won't get a deduction, et cetera, et cetera. So we could probably do a winning today. But then someone actually pointed out later on Twitter saying that I think from the last 5 games, we've got 7 points, which if we were to do that between now and the end of the season, we'd end up on 42, which pre a points deduction, that might even be enough. So we're going to have to wait and see on that front. But it's, I guess that's a glass half full approach, isn't it?
It's just like what I said in the group chat. And I know it was unfortunate with the Bournemouth home game. But, you know, the bottom half teams, they're the teams who we kind of need to beat at home. And aside from Sheffield United, we've not done that. You know, we drew to Burnley, we drew to Luton, we've lost to Everton, we drew to Brentford, we've lost to Bournemouth. I know we've still got like Fulham, Palace, etc., Wolves, I think, to play first and in the bottom half. But that's the problem with us. Like, because we haven't done the job in his home games thus far, we're kind of looking at really today where you'd probably say prima facie points, a decent result, but we're trying to like right that wrong from not getting the points we need in the home game. You know, we played Brentford and Bournemouth are in the bottom half. We've took 2 points from 12 out of them two, for example. You know, we've got to go to the likes of Luton. I mean, I expect Sheffield United and Burnley to be down by the time we play them, but the likes of Luton, we've got to go to away. We've got to go to Everton away. So it's tough, you know. But the positive I'll take out of it, and this is what I said in the group, is that no one's gained on us this weekend. You know, Everton have drew, Luton have drew. You know, Sheffield United have just self-imploded again. I mean, Burnley have drew, but I don't really think they'll personally do much. I mean, Palace have lost, and then you would expect Brentford to lose tomorrow night, but you never know. So I guess that's a little bit of a positive. But and I don't like comparing this to other teams, but you kind of get caught up in it, don't you? But we've got two back-to-back home games now in the Premier League, and obviously forgetting about Bristol City, and we need to kind of get some results in them, really. I think we need a win out of two for sure, at least.
Definitely. And that we'll move on to the slept on it thoughts that we have.
Red side of the Trent. Slept on it thoughts.
Oh, obviously, quite happy to do slept on it thoughts when no one slept is another matter, but it's okay. So, we've already got a few here. So, Emma said, decent away point from home, but need to turn these into wins. Points deduction looming with Luton on fire could be an interesting few weeks. Sam said, just a bit confused why Tavares gets picked every week. Premier Elliot said, 1-1 against a bogey team is probably a fair result. One day we'll beat them. Murillo gets better and better. Nice not to talk about the keeper for a change. Great fault as ever. Keep up the good work. Thank you very much, Elliot. Alex said, did well to battle back from early setback, but again, another team down at 10 men and we failed to register anything meaningful on goal. 6 shots on targets. Were they all just in the first half? I trust Nuno, but God, we need a plan B. And Capability and Function said, where has the vitality of Newcastle and Man United's supporters gone to? If this were a normal season without a looming points deduction, then this would be a decent point. It isn't, and it's not. We have no attacking plan other than counters. And yeah, I suppose that's it, really. Oh, we have one from Lee, too. That's what I have to say. So Lee said, again, didn't see a single minute, owing to the wife's birthday, school wearer. Would have probably taken a draw before the game, and good to see Hudson-Odoi score. So, yeah, I think, to be fair, that sort of sums up the game, really. Like, no one really cares. Well, obviously, there are some other things. Actually, someone like Pete Cooks has made a good point in the comments, actually, that Chris Wood is injured and has a hamstring injury, which is really annoying. It feels like, you know, how Norwich and Fulham are basically sort of like contractually obliged never to play each other in a league game because one always goes up and one goes down. It feels like we can't have a Wanny and Wood fit at the same time. It's really annoying.
I think he's injured, isn't he, Rigi? But I guess he's still at the club, so I don't know whether that would I know he's not obviously offered too much at all, but I'm not sure if that would scupper him to move to the MLS because, yeah, we could kind of do with him retire his injury record as well. Is Lee's wife a Sheffield Wednesday fan, isn't she?
I believe so.
Yeah, she had a great birthday yesterday because I see they got battered by 4-0 by Huddersfield in a relegation battle. Yeah,
really, really bleak times for them.
Happy birthday, Holly.
Yeah, there's still obviously talk that Origi might actually, it's a good point. I wonder if he's even registered because there's a good chance he'll probably go back anyway. So, and be sent off to MLS.
I think there's a bit of time, isn't there, before he registers a squad now, I believe. I think so. But I don't think it's registered as soon as the window shuts. Because can you remember back to last season, we registered players, didn't we? And then somebody got injured and we tried to get Steve Cook re-registered, the Premier League gave a big two fingers up to us. And he was sat in the stands at Fulham away instead.
Yeah, that's when, Bollins and McKenna got injured.
Yes, that's it.
And both of them were out for like 3 months.
Yeah.
Only Forest. I've got a few player performances for you. So, Adam, we'll start with you. I'm going to give you Nico Dominguez. Because I saw, Forest or Labour Pods? I believe it was Forest or Labour Pods. So they put that he was poor. And I was like, what? Are you joking? And it seemed quite a few had that opinion as well. But what did you think of him?
Yeah, I've spoke to Chris on WhatsApp actually from Forest All Over about this. I thought he was very mixed. I didn't think he was amazing. Didn't think he was terrible. I thought like his ball playing was to be questioned. He gave the ball away quite cheaply a fair few times. But then ball retention wise and actually getting a foot in, I thought he was pretty good. But the problem was it was when he was probably losing the ball. So, yeah, I don't think he was too amazing. I don't think he was that bad either. But I think he had to do a lot of work in there. There was a lot of housery going on of him going down and whatnot. And he ran his socks off, to be fair to him, Dominguez. He never fails to give you 100% when he's on it. But, yeah, I just thought he needed to be a little bit more careful in terms of being in possession and keeping the ball and keeping us on the attack. Sometimes we just lost momentum because of not even just him, but so many people just misplacing passes and being so sloppy in possession. So yeah, that's my take on it. I'd give him like a 6.5, if anything. I think that'd probably be about right.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I thought Dominguez was good today. I really like how like combative he is. I love how much he covers. Like he seems to be everywhere. Like in midfield, like I just thought he was really, really good in that sort of sense. But yeah, you're right. It was weird though. I think the stats did say that he completed the most passes from midfield, but equally, it's the ones that he misses that you notice. So I do. Well,
that's probably gave me a big two fingers. But yeah, he gave away the ball in a lot of.
Both things can be true because you're right. I think like a lot of those passes would have been just simple ball retention, just like 5 yards.
Just giving the ball to bloody Lewis Cook and Ryan Christie, and they get shit on the counter attack, and you go, for goodness sake, we're in a good position, just giving the ball away.
But yeah, no doubt. I think it's one of those. But I think like generally both things can be true because like. Again, I was watching it with my dad and he was saying the same things about Dominguez giving the ball away, et cetera, et cetera. So it was obviously a common thing that was picked up, but I actually thought he played pretty well. So 6.5 is a fair assessment. Reese, I'm going to give you Nuno Tavares, who I personally would not have given a 6.5 to, but I'd be interested to see how you felt on his performance.
What would you have given him?
About the number on the back of his shirt.
Okay. I'm just repeating what I've said off previous podcasts. He's kind of so unorthodox that he seems to do some very tough things very well, and then the most basic things he's like he kind of messes up at. I mean, there was one. It was in the second half where he let the ball bounce on his wing, and then he'd like they got the wrong side of the ball, so their man got in between and he was like not goal side and he just like went into the back of him and we had control of the ball to them having a free kick in a dangerous position. I'd have to say I didn't think he was the best today. I think Nuno obviously likes him because he's when he opens his legs he is really quick and that's what's the frustrating thing with Hudson-Odoi and Tavares. I don't think they kind of do that enough. When they open their legs, they're really quick. Especially, and like, there's one, and I think in the first half, where Tavares actually got on his bike and he can speed away from most players. It's just that he's a bit sometimes kind of stop-start. And then I was looking for him as well, because you look at that left side and think it's quite pacey. So I'm looking for like Tavares to get on Hudson's door, his overlap, and he's like stood back, and I'm just like, oh, just push yourself a bit more, guys. So they're like, just frustrating, really. Yeah, just a bit frustrating, really. I mean, like I say, you can see at times he's got some ability about him, but then at other times you're thinking this is why, you know, he's been farmed out on loan from Arsenal, really. I mean, the big debate is if he's kind of better than Toffolo, isn't it? I think Toffolo offers you more all-round as a solid kind of base. I think, like I say, with probably Tavares, you'd expect him to get a bit get forward quicker, etc. And he's kind of got to do that more. It's just defensively, he's a bit, at times, a bit sceptical, isn't he? It's just so in the kind of indifferent from the minute to the next, really. It's like, it's just hard to kind of describe. I think a few do go as well. I mean, Twitter people go OTT on everything. I think people go OTT saying he's absolutely bleeding terrible. But I can sometimes you pull your hair out with him. But this is like we said. I think we said this on a last podcast when we was on about he maybe could be departing. Nuno's playing him. He seems to be Nuno. Well, not seems to be. He is Nuno's first choice left back at the minute. I mean, kind of Toffolo can't really get a look in, can he? And I mean, he didn't even get on the pitch today, Toffolo. So, yeah, I'm kind of hoping he can start making more good decisions than bad, really. You just pull your hair out at times.
Well, that moment you pull your hair out, Reece, is when he gets into the box with an absolute peach of a ball from Murillo. Yeah, and you're like, right, make the right decision. And he clips the ball into the air. Like,
that's what I mean. Like, that's a really good point, Adam. That was a brilliant overlap from Tavares. Gets on the overlap, gets into a brilliant position to the byline. A one you say, give it to me, give it to my feet. And what does he do? Clips it to the back post where nobody's there. Put it across the floor or put it across the 6-yard box with someone, at least somebody might be coming in, or you can say, well, where's somebody coming in here to slide that in? It just clicked it, and it clicked it into a decent area, don't get me wrong, but there was nobody there. So it was
like he didn't look up,
waste of time, really. Yeah, that's what I mean. I mean, the overlap for that move was really good. And, you know, if he can do that quite often, you've got a real threat there, because he is really quick. It's just that he just doesn't seem to do the better decision more times often than not, and that's the frustrating aspect with him, really. I mean, and then he had that shot, didn't he? I mean,
oh god,
I think I cleared the stadium. I think it was funny because my mum and dad came around mine to watch it, and my dad was like, shoot it. So we was kind of expecting him to roll it out his feet and then hit it, and he just hit it like first time, and I think that went into the channel, didn't it? And my mum was like to my dad, oh, you said shoot. And my dad was like, yeah, well, get it out of his feet first, for goodness sake. But, he is frustrating. But like I say, he's Nuno's man at left back, isn't he? So I'm hoping he can start producing a little bit more, really.
The only thing I will give him some sort of credit for, I'll say, is that it is worth noting that he's basically played about 30 minutes for the first half of the season. Like, whether it's because of injury.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on McDonald's app at participating restaurants. 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Because it's like of not being picked. He hasn't really played. So I understand there'll be some rustiness, but boy.
To be fair, I thought there was quite a lot of players rusty today. I mean, you look, that front four is probably the front four we kind of all want to see, isn't it? But I thought Gibbs-White was pretty rusty. I thought Alanga was very rusty. Tarver was very rusty. I mean, you even saw, I mean, Tyra did that brilliant bit of skill into to get by his man and then, you know, rolled it at him one mile per hour into the keeper's arms. It was a great pass, great pass back. But so, yeah, there was a bit of rustiness. And like we said, what do you reckon we've used the last month or so? Probably the same 16 players, maybe. So,
yeah,
you know, and we have a squad of 20 nowadays on the match day. So, yeah, I mean, it's positive that Niakate's come back, although, you know, that's on the back of him having a personal tragedy with missing the penalty to see Senegal out. But now we've lost Aina, Sangare and Bali for the rest of the tournament because, you know, they'll be in that stupid third place game as well, even if they do lose in the semi-finals.
Yeah, that is a problem that... Also, like I said before, I think it was like last week, one before, whoever wins that, if it's Nigeria or like Ivory Coast, we aren't seeing that player for another week at least.
It's such a shame with Sangare as well, because you're kind of begging him to get going. And he played really well at Newcastle, the only game he's played under Nuno. And then it's like he can't seem to get going for us. And with obviously his record signing, so you're just like, oh. And Ivory Coast has been terrible as well this tournament. Now, these stupid rules of letting worst third place teams do, like, you know, Portugal won it on the back, didn't they?
Yeah,
Euro 2016, and they didn't win a game till the semi-finals. You know, just
Ivory Coast be the same. They have not won a game in 90 minutes.
Yeah, this
they?
Is what I mean. This is quantity over quality. It's they get the start on it because the time where OAPs, every team in bleeding Europe will get in the Euros because they just add that many teams to it every year. But that's for another pod.
Adam, not to risk poking the bear, but I am going to give you Ryan Yates because, obviously, for those unaware, Adam had a bit of a frank discussion after the match about his select choice of words towards Mr. Yates.
I didn't like slag him off or anything. I just told him which direction we were shooting in.
Because where to pass.
Yeah, well, I'm not being funny, right? So I watch him in the warm-up. I'm so sorry, right? I don't want to, like, go on at him because I feel like most of the time this season he's actually been fairly okay. Yeah. And he just really, like, grinded me gears today in terms of in the warm-up, he's basically being the man of, like, I'm going to get the ball off the centre-half and I'm going to play. Every time he got it, he looked backwards straight away. And even in times when he had on the half turn to just drive into a bit of space and then, like, kind of compose himself and put his foot on the ball and then maybe do something with it, just kept going backwards and hiding. And you can't do that as a central midfielder, even on a Sunday league pitch, for crying out loud. And he's our captain. So you kind of look for him to be that inspiration. And he just wasn't for me. He was absolutely... Ryan Yates of in the Championship when we wanted him to get foddered out to a League One side today. That's what he was. He was looking for fouls all the time, more interested in doing that than actually playing. There was a point where he actually come for a throw-in and Danilo actually just went in front of him, took the ball and just actually dictated and just did what Yates should be doing anyway. And that tells me a lot, to be honest. I was really disappointed. I made my feelings clear and someone had a go at me. That's fine. That's their opinion. I probably did get a bit annoyed and a bit OTT. And I think that was because my head had clearly fallen off at the fact that we had no options going forward for that last 15 minutes against 10 men. Like we completely narrowed our play and that suited Bournemouth to a T. And if the roles were reversed, they would have had plenty of chances against us. Whether we'd have survived or not, it was a different matter. But it really frustrated me as someone that's your captain, your central midfielder, someone that's got to be a bit of an engine room. And I know that's not his game, but you just step up. If you make a mistake, that's fine. At least I know then you've made the effort. But I was just so disappointed in him. And the quicker we get Sangare back, the better, because Sangare can play on the half turn. That's why Mangala was so good, because he'd go forward if he needed to. And I'm sorry, but if we're going to stay up in this division and actually start playing teams in a certain way, then Ryan Yates doesn't get near my 11. I'm sorry. I just thought he was rubbish. I'd give him about a one, if that's being kind.
You can't give him a one, like a five, baby.
I'll give him a five, but that's being kind.
I think when people's had a pretty bang average game. They stay on a six or a five, don't they?
You know, like the worst thing is he got into the positions where you kind of want that late centre midfielder to get into, and he was passing it back to bloody Neto and all. I know the first one might have got ruled out because I think there was a bit of a handball issue, but the second one, drive through that. That is a pitiful effort. I'm sorry.
The first one, to be fair to him, is like a snapshot. He's just got to kind of get a shot away there. You haven't really got time. I don't know why, if this is a tactic from us, we're trying to kind of play through Ryan Yates in terms of passing, because that's not his game at all. It's not. I don't want to be mean as well, but that isn't his strength, his passing game. You know, Yates' strength, as we all know, is kind of hassling, winning fouls, putting pressure on the opposition, pressing them into mistakes, really. If you're looking at him to kind of dictate the play with his passing, that's not going to happen. He just hasn't got that passing repertoire in his arsenal, unfortunately. I know people probably think, oh, we're getting on his back. I'm not. Or that's just me being honest.
That's just his strengths, mate.
To be fair, that is why we spent the money, not because of just Ryan on his own, but that's why we spent the money on Sangare, because he'd be this number six where he could pick the ball up from the centre half and dictate the play and, you know, and get it passing us through the channels to the players like your Morgan Gibbs-Whites, etc., who can obviously make stuff happen at the other end of the pitch. There was a cluster of players there, I mean, who I'd probably put in that category who were very, very
average. Was pretty awful and all. You could add him to the list, because I thought Joe Lacker is someone that you think, oh yeah, he could knock on the England door. No chance. Absolutely no chance in hell. Because there's times when he's getting on the ball out wide where you'd like him to get on the ball, similar to how James Maddison does float and Ødegaard and all these great number 10s. But then he doesn't do anything with it. He kind of just pops it off. And then what's the point of moving to those areas if you're not then going to go and do something and be creative with it? It doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, I just think I really do like Morgan. I just think at times he kind of gets caught on the board and trying to overplay, whereas, you know, you can't just keep it like ticking over it. And as a number 10, you know, you kind of got that band, aren't you, in front of the striker where you can kind of free roam, get into pockets, picking up. Well, that's what he was doing at Bristol City, and he was making things happen just today. But that you know, he's what is he, 23, Morgan?
Yeah, just turned 23.
Number 10s. We had this with a certain Portuguese number 10. I'm not mentioning his name, but they're gonna have they're gonna have good and bad games, number 10s, because a lot of the time a number 10 is trying to make things happen through the either needle, etc. And a lot of sometimes it don't come off. Mm. You know, that was just hopefully with our back-to-back home games against two teams who, you know, are probably where he wants to get to in terms of playing for a team who are competing in Europe. Well, I know Newcastle are out now, but hopefully he can be as kind as talisman in the next two games.
Yeah, just going back to Yates, I think what frustrated me is I watched him against Man United and I thought he was absolutely brilliant in that game. And there's for the first goal, he plays the pass out to Elanga that completely takes a Man United player out of it. I can't remember who it is. I can't remember if it's Dalot or someone else. And you're just like, well, you can obviously do it. So why aren't you doing it on a consistent basis against a weaker opposition? And that's what frustrates me.
To be fair with United, mate, their midfielder was non-existent against
us. I know, but like,
I'm not taking anything away from us, but, you know, the second goal, they let Yatesy run 30, 40 yards without anyone even going to him, didn't they? Teams like other sides aren't just going to give you that freedom. You know, I've seen Manu cut open in midfield so many times this season. And at the start, when they just had Casemiro as a holder, and he just couldn't do it in the Premier League on his own. I mean, the problem as well with Yatesy, I mean, it don't help when you get posts like there was that the Forest app one, they saying Ryan Yates has been rated 7.7 out of 10. It was the Forest man of the match today. I feel sorry for him in that sense because
popularity.
He clearly wasn't nowhere near the man of the match. I mean, for me, it was Murillo or Omobadadeli again. And that's just going to, like, incite people giving him stick in it. You know what I mean? This is what I mean about social media and this balance. It's either, or it's kind of all or nothing as the pun goes, as the series goes. It's like, oh, it's either you're absolutely amazing or you're absolutely terrible. And, you know, and he's doing, and when I saw that, and then every comment below was just giving him stick. And it's like the poor bloke can't even done this himself. You know, I mean, sometimes people going over the top on him is actually doing him more harm than good.
Oh, absolutely. You know, like, yeah, we've always said this.
I've seen, like, when he's had a really good game, people saying, oh, he should be close to the England squad, and that's not productive at all. You know, he does, for me, Yatesy, and I think he's a solid squad player at this level, and there is games where I think you need him. There is games, well, we said that about Everton at home, and he was quite poor in that one, but, you know, there's games when you need him. You know, the Man U home game is really good. And then it's games where you probably need a bit more from your midfielders who are going to obviously pass. But at the minute, like I said, the only other option really is Danilo, isn't it? So I guess Nuno's thinking was, well, Yates is the captain. It's going to be a tough day down here at Bournemouth. He's probably someone we need in the midfield. So, yeah, I can see it from that sense.
What I will say is I didn't actually think Yates was too bad until about the 75th minute, and he just started to blow. And it was really prominent, especially when we went out at 10 men, because he was so slow on the ball. And it was like, when you need to be quick, you need to... And that's, we weren't pushing wide either. You're very right, Adam. We just went narrow, and that suited them to the tee. Because like, if you're... We all know it's like football in basics. It doesn't matter what level you're at. If it's 11-a-side or whatever else. If they go down at 10 men, you go as wide as possible. You make them run, you stretch them. We wouldn't even try to do that today. And that was really disappointing. But he was just so slow to release Montiel, or so slow to release, was it Reina when he sort of popped over there, or whoever it may be. He was taking an absolute age to get a ball under his feet and just pick a pass. It's like, come on, like, it's just straight up the line. That's all you have to do. You're not asking anything special, just straight up the line.
Well,
quickly.
This is what I mean. Like, he kept, like, drifting towards the right-hand side to me with Montiel, And then, like, Reina and Ribéry was kind of in the middle. Well, them roles need to be reversed. Reina needs to be on the wing because he's someone who can cross the ball and beat a man. And Yates needs to be in that middle of the park. And this is what I mean about lacking in ideas when we're against 10. It's like we're not kind of sure, and we're just going to, you know, very much like some of us recruitment at times, we're going to just chuck some mud at a wall and hope it sticks kind of thing.
No, it was very frustrating. But, yeah, I mean... Yeah, as always, the subject of great conversation, Ryan Yates.
Oh, as ever.
Yeah. Reese, I'll give you two wrap-up player performances. I'm going to give you Callum Hudson-Odoi, because he's another one I feel that's been unfairly maligned. I've been very public about that. I feel that the expectancy levels, and we spoke about this as well on this podcast as well, the expectancy levels people have for him as his Champions League winner, who was like this absolute demon wonder kid once upon a time. I think people sort of expect him to be that now, but also don't take into consideration that we wouldn't have got for £3 million if he was still that player now. And I personally thought that he showed a glimpse of it for the goal, because it wasn't just winning the tackle, like Adam said, but to beat two players. Like, everyone says at him, why can't he get on his man? Why can't he take his man on? He just skimmed two players and just whacked it bottom corner. So I thought, aside from that, again, I thought he's our best threat personally going forward. But what did you think of him?
Well, like a lot of you, you know, he's still a young lad, isn't he? What is he? 23, maybe? Something like that. He's still really young, isn't he? You know, with young attacking players, it can be bloody frustrating at times. You know, and Hudson-Odoi is no exception. And I get what you're saying, Christian. Like, people have probably still got this guy who Bayern Munich wanted to sign for 78 million in the head. This guy who was getting England caps before playing for his senior team, etc. I mean, that kind of ship has sailed, really, because, you know, he's gone from being a 70, 80 million pound player in terms of what Bayern were willing to offer to us picking him up for 3 million. And there's only one reason for that, and that's because his performance levels have dropped, really. Hence why he's playing with respect to a side who are now in a relegation battle. I don't, like, it's not from a lack of trying from him. I don't think it's never down to that. And to be honest, I mean, the goal was something what we've all wanted to see, weren't we? It was a carbon copy, really, of the Burnley goal, aside from he's gone for the bottom corner rather than the top this time. And like Adam said earlier, no keeper in the world's getting to that. It was right in the corner. It was a great finish. And it was at a perfect time, really, because it was right pretty much bang on half time. You know, Iraola probably rips his team talk up, and so does Nuno. And you kind of think, can we use that momentum to go into the second half, which didn't really happen because I think the game second half was pretty drab, wasn't it? And what I did like about it as well was, you know, he has been struggling a little bit for confidence and he's obviously not scored since that Burnley game. And it wasn't a sense of, oh, it's all about me, I've just scored a really good goal. It was get the bleeding ball, let's get back to the halfway line and let's go again. And I really like that because it would have been very easy for Carnim to run off. You know, I always think of the Giroud celebration at Bournemouth. I don't know if you guys can remember when he just had to score the scorpion kick against Palace and had equalised at Bournemouth after being like 3-1 down and he was running around the pitch, flicking his boots up and... You know, for Arsenal, I'm thinking, get back to the bloody halfway line here, try and win the game. So that was really good to see. And it's something I've said, and we've probably all said it, you know, players need runs of games, and he's getting a pretty consistent run of games. And you want him to see things like he's done today with the goal more times often than not. And you want him to see really him taking a man on more often, because I get what people are saying at times. It is a little bit frustrating that he's kind of cutting back, looking for Tavares, where, you know, get direct at your man and take him on, you know what I mean? So fingers crossed that can give him a bit of confidence. And the annoying thing was as well, you know, he was running straight through the middle of the pitch, wanting until Billing decided to try and break his leg. But, yeah, that was a real shame because that ended his day, and hopefully... There's nothing bad apart from just a bit of a bruising and a sore one on that one for him.
Yeah, definitely. That was become very nasty. Just to wrap up their performances, I think obviously I'm just going to give a very special mention to Moreno and Omamadele, as you did earlier, Reece. I thought, you know, for all this talk about Dominic Solanke being this like shoo-in for England's Euro squad, I barely noticed him, and that's because of the work those two did. They completely pocketed him, and you know, they've got a combined age of 42, I think, those two, and it's just very exciting to see them. And I think, like, especially Andy O, he's really had to wait and be patient, and like, I think he's taken his chance with two hands to the point now where, you know, you're looking at Niakate, this like wonderful centre half. It's like, how are you going to get back into the team?
You've got Felipe sat on the bench as well, yeah. And then you've also got Willie Bolly to come back. So
exactly,
gives us plenty of options in that. Yeah, them two have been brilliant. I mean, Solanke is shooting for the England squad 0% that he gets on that plane, because I just think strikers.
I reckon he probably does. I reckon it'll probably be Solanke.
Kane, Watkins. I think Ivan Toney might get ahead of him as well, but we'll see.
Oh, maybe, yeah. Unless he, I don't know, maybe has a bet on it, who knows. But anyway, very quickly before we move on, just obviously a few bits and bobs to the transfer news, because even though the window has now shut, and obviously, as you know, Nottingham Forest never stops. 365 days a year is transfer news of Forest. And there's been a few little bits to go through today that have come out. Obviously, so Remo Freud has moved to Bologna, as we made permanent. He's hit the required parameters to make that an obligation. So good luck to him. Again, another much maligned figure I thought was mostly unfair. Good key part in that 9-game unbeaten home run last season. Good luck to him back in Italy. And yeah, all the best. Serge Aurier left for Galatasaray. Serge Aurier, I think, will go down as one of the best free transfers a club's ever made. Instrumental in us staying us last year, defied all the naysayers, you know, used that leadership and experience to great effect, very popular guy in the dressing room. And even this season with two assists in the opening day against Sheffield United to bail us out, because that wasn't exactly a convincing win against an awful, awful side, who still now in like early February haven't got more than 10 points yet. Like, dearie me. And last but by no means least, Joe Worrell is off to Besiktas, it looks like. So he's taken the come to Besiktas PR propaganda from a few years ago very seriously. And I don't recall saying good luck. Anyway, we can move on to Bristol City.
I wish him good luck. I'm not that horrible. I think something I didn't mention on the last pod, and I know obviously with these rumours and that, it's kind of upset. It's kind of tarnished his end, hasn't it? But you know, I've got to take into account as well, you know, with him having that, and I'm not using this as an excuse, or with the family bereavement and stuff. So, like I said to Adam, me and Adam had a chat on a pod a while back, and I kind of thought it was the end for him once Cooper had gone, and the fact that Nuno's pretty much not used him at all. I think a clean break's best for everyone, and I'll remember him for, you know, helping us get back to the Premier League, and I don't wish anything against him personally. But that's my opinion.
Well, he might get a medal this season, but it's a stop, I think.
Oh, so, wow.
Yeah.
Are you still in Europe at all?
I'm not too sure. It looked like he might have gone to Traz Bonsor at one point.
Yeah, which is far funny because he actually played them today. Yeah. So that was kind of like, oh, Jay, where was he? Why was he signing for us? Oh, no, he's going to the opposition. Oh, right, okay.
But
I know it was split opinion, Jav. I mean, I've seen Twitter, and, you know, I do agree with the sense, really, because you shouldn't really walk out and that, but, you know, it's one of them. We all move on. Well, apparently he's only kind of going on loan, isn't he? What I've seen, and that there's no obligation, and it kind of seems
might be a loan option. You know? Yeah, I mean, there's no point. I mean, go win a medal and come back and be sold again, I suppose. Mm. I don't know, but we'll see.
If we was to go down, you know, he's probably good for that level. Same with McKenna, really. I mean, it's a tricky one.
Mm. Anyway, the last news, so we're going back to Bristol City. And because we like playing Bristol City so much that we want to play them again. And also what I didn't realise, and which is a massive, massive kick in the nuts, is that, you know, so Yates and Dominguez are suspended. Obviously, we've lost McKenna, Warrell, Aguilera. And someone was sort of saying, oh, you know, good chance to play Selves, Reina and Ribeiro. None of them can actually play because the way the FA Cup rules are is that, so for the only players you have available to you or signed on, sorry, for the first game are the only ones you can use for a second game, which I suppose makes sense, but it's just a bit annoying. So it's a good chance that we'll have the classic Vlach v Turner debate again. And it looks like, well, who knows? So that'll be an interesting one. Leeds gone from 1-0 Forest win. We can also talk about Newcastle very quickly as well before we zip off. So very quickly, predictions, Adam, for Bristol City first and foremost.
I don't know, like, because them three not being able, well, them five actually not being able to play kind of really stretches us, doesn't it? So for me, I know
Kouyaté, I believe. Kouyaté and Nikasi are able to play.
Kouyaté, I know he was having extended leave because obviously his father died, didn't he? So
I don't know, but I imagine he'll be available. I'm not sure though. Who knows?
It'll be interesting to see how much we rotate. I mean, Awuni looked like he was blowing after about 60 minutes because obviously he's just come back from injury. And for me, while he's our only fit striker, it seems. I know we've brought in Ribeiro, but an 18-year-old kid who's never played too much football in Portugal, never mind the Premier League, is not really something I find something to rely on. So I'd rather like protect Awuni in that sense and kind of wrap him in bubble wrap a little bit. And I know like it's a bit disruptive to the cup and everything, but I feel like you're going to have to maybe look at one of the kids or you're just going to play Awuni or a false nine or something. So yeah, as much as I'd like to win, I'd much more focus on the league, to be fair, and our Premier League status. But I do think we've got enough to win. I think it will be tight. I think maybe 2-1 Forest. I just don't know who's really going to play. It's going to be an interesting rotated side, I'd imagine.
No, definitely. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked to see Felipe Nicari start, to be honest.
It's a shame Christina's lad is not here after his banger.
Absolutely,
at the
weekend. Yeah.
What a worldie.
Pretty good.
Great start for the boy.
Reese, what about you?
Yeah, you said the Vlach v Imos and Turner debate. We've not really mentioned the goalie, have we? I mean, I'm just
how
a judge
lovely.
Of him. Yeah,
how
well,
nice
I mean,
how nice
it was. I think it was, he didn't really have much to do, did he, really? I mean, people saying what was your thoughts on Selves online? He didn't really have much to do. I mean, whenever he got the ball back, he seemed a lot more assured than what Turner has been with his kicking. But to be honest, there's no disrespect to Matt, but that's not very hard. I mean, we are down to bare bones, aren't we? Is it Wednesday night, isn't it? I mean, yeah, it's going to be obviously Vlach v Imos or Turner. You know, probably be Montiel at right back, Toffolo left back. Nikata and Felipe will probably come in. You're hoping Kouyaté is going to be available because we've only got two fit centre mids, which would be him and Danilo. And then you're kind of looking at, you know, Alanga, Gibbs White, Hudson Odoi, because that's kind of all we've got really. And then it probably is going to have to be Tyro, isn't it? Or you took in a kid up there, which I just couldn't imagine Nuno really doing. I mean, it doesn't look like Origi would be fit, I'd imagine. So, I mean, the bench is going to be full of kids, isn't it?
Yeah, you're going to have like a Song, Gardner.
Yeah. I mean, the kids who probably be on the bench have all kind of gone out on loan, really. Like you say, Aguilera, and I know Julian Larson's gone out on loan, Antti to Morecambe. So, the bench is going to be like Fred there. So that is a concern because, again, like you say, Adam, you're kind of having to play Tyro, really, which, you know, is not really ideal because we don't want him to kind of break down, do we? I guess this is where you could say it would have made sense to get Akpom, but also he wouldn't have been available. So I fancy it to be a draw again. I really do. I think it will go all the way. I think it'll be extra time, and I'm going to go for us to win on penalties as revenge for them beating us on penalties. And I believe it was the LDV Vans Trophy at the time back in League One. They beat us at the City.
It was
probably in front of about 3,000.
You're still holding on to that?
No, it's just something I remember running when we got obviously in the penalty shootouts with Sheffield United. I remember people running back through the penalty shootouts we've had as a club, and I think that was the only one we'd lost, hadn't it?
We've had a pretty
quite a good record, haven't we?
Yeah. we beat Bury, didn't we, in the cup, and
beat Spurs.
We obviously beat Notts County back, which we shouldn't have done, but we did. Obviously beat Sheffield United. So yeah. I mean, I'm hoping we can wrap it up in 90 minutes. It'd be absolutely brilliant, wouldn't it, to think we're 3-0 up after an hour and we can bring off some players and rest them, but that isn't going to happen with Forest, is it? It's the easy way, the hard way, or the Forest way, which is the hard way but harder. So that's my 2 pence on that. I think it'll go all the way and we'll win on penalties.
Well, I'm gonna be a bit more optimistic. I think we're gonna win 2-0. And hopefully we'll get like a song on the pitch for the last 20 minutes something to give Tyler a rest and like
the bench is gonna be three keepers on there because we've got them in full bench.
Does Big Wayne play? Does Big Wayne play?
He's a period of
season. Put Vlachodimos like that centre attacking mid.
I'm just like looking through the team and there's hardly anyone. I mean, like the youngsters, you're looking at like McDonald, Gardner, Josh Power, probably going to be on there, Osong. But apart from that,
like Nico and Tavares will be on the bench in Murillo.
There's obviously the players who would drop out as rotation from today, and then the rest, it's just going to be kids, isn't it? It's a shame, really. That I mean, those are the rules, so I'm not going to whinge about them. It's kind of a shame, really, because
you mean perfect Ribeiro,
and Rayner as well, I guess. Yeah. They're the rules, and
you I'll watch just, like Forest play them anyway, and then we'll get you kicked out.
We
win the entire trophy and have to have the whole. And actually, I know it's asterisk next to it taken away from us.
Yeah, like, I mean, Bristol City lost on Friday night to Leeds, so
obviously we'll be sort of aggressive slightly. Did you hear the Andy Hinchcliffe commentary for the penalty appeal?
I saw it, yeah.
It was looking for it.
I'm not being funny, but I couldn't stand Hinchcliffe when we was in the Championship, so nothing would have changed. And I mean, I'm not too keen on many Sky commentators. Even I think this might be controversial, but I think even Peter Drury's got a bit too over pun use. But that's my 2 pence. I did see someone on Twitter saying, yeah, get rid of Peter Drury and bring in Gary Weaver. I thought, oh God, that's literally like the Championship version of Peter Drury. So, yeah.
Deary me. Shall we cover Newcastle? I don't know if we have a preview in the midweek, do we? Because we might not. I think, of course, it's a quick turnaround, isn't it? So,
yeah,
are we doing
I've not investigated or...
Yeah. Are we doing a review? Actually, we're
doing a review of Newcastle.
No, Bristol City.
No, I mean Bristol City.
That'll call into one, I'd imagine, guys, listeners, viewers. Because I just think time and everything else.
Fair enough. Okay, well, in that case, we'll go on new cost pictures now then. So,
full team back. It's going to be a thumping 4-0 win after their drossing of the weekend. They stunk up in St. James's, didn't they? Let's face it.
Thankfully, at least they got a bloody point. Thank God.
Yeah. Should have won it as well. See that ball at the end, the Vermento put across.
No, I've not watched that.
Should have scored.
I think it's going to be a difficult game, though, against Newcastle. But us at home, and I back us against anyone at home, I always say this, I think we'll beat them 3-1 again.
Reece, what are you?
Can we get Emmanuel Dennis back to chip Nick Pope again? I'm going to go what I went for. I believe I got the Bournemouth game right. I think I said 1-1. So I'm going to go with that again. I think it'll be a draw, Newcastle. To be honest, out of two, the one I fancy winning more is West Ham. Personally, I think if we was to get 4 out of 2 home games, I'd be pretty happy with that. We need a win out of two, that's for sure. At the very, very least. I think 1-1. I mean, to be fair to Newcastle, before yesterday's, I'm not sure what to describe that game, but they went to Aston Villa and won 3-1. So, and then they can't beat Luton at home. That's very Forest, isn't it? Then a couple of results. Yeah.
I'm going to be very optimistic. I'm going to think we're going to win our next two home games. I'm going to say this is going to be tight, very, very tight, but I'm going to go with a 1-0 win for Forest and Matt Selves to have an absolute worldie against his old club. He will not have Anthony Gordon, by the way.
Is he injured, is he?
He left in crutches. He didn't look in a good way at all.
The funny thing is, like, Newcastle have slated kind of two players who they've sold to us. Chris Wood went back and absolutely retired the whole city with a hat trick. And then Matt Sells, although he only played a few games for him, I don't think got many good reviews. So hopefully he has a worldie. It's a shame Wood's not fit, is it, really? I thought I'd never say that, but after his last performance against Newcastle, his hamstring's probably going to be probably a month, isn't it, really?
Probably, even if
it's a slight one.
Which is pain. Shame. But anyway, we ultimately, there are positive stakes from if we got a point away, which is not the worst result. Obviously, last season, that would have been a bit of a rarity. But hopefully we can get a few wins in the ball. The dream would be to win the next three home games in the Cup and the League. That'd be amazing. But hopefully we can do that. We obviously have the ability to do it. So hopefully we'll soon see. But we'll be with you very soon, whether it's after the Bristol City game or after the Newcastle game. But we'll have...
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on McDonald's app at participating restaurants. 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.